Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Clever intro.
So make it a clever intro.
Listen, man, they're all clever because I act like we're not recording. Oh, hey, are we recording? Okay, it's going off track. I'm Steven. This is Brad. This is Jonah. Mike is off working, doing whatever that means. Today's guest is Trevor Moore. You might know him from The Whitest Kids You Know. You might know him from the show Breaking In. You might know him from the movie Miss March, or you might just be meeting him right now on this very podcast entitled Going Off Track. Trevor is super funny and has written funny things and is touring right now on his new record, Drunk Text to Myself, which he talks about in this podcast. Okay, Trevor falls in that category of professional people who are constantly doing things and creating things and seem very ambitious and make me feel bad about my own laziness and why I watch television. I'm getting kind of annoyed of talking to these people.
Yeah, they are making me feel like I'm not doing enough.
But you see, you are. You're doing this, plus you have the gig running the studio, setting things out, and also you guys are guitar players. And this is where I find that people can, one, meditate. We talk about that with other people. But if you can make yourself practice guitar, or any musical instrument, I should say.
I can't.
No? Well, how'd you learn to play?
Oh, well, I hadn't had sex with a woman yet, and I was seeing that as the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, it's so hard to practice as an adult when you have other stuff to do. When I was a teenager, I was like, I don't have to do homework. Like, I'm not like I can't afford to eat if I don't. Like, so I was just like, I was going to play guitar all day.
Exactly.
And I feel like I didn't get much better from the time I was like 17 to
I'm
now.
No better.
I'm probably worse. Now I just playing open tuning.
You went to freaking Berkeley. You talked about that.
I did like a 5-week class there, but I definitely wasn't like, there were all these dudes that were like in the Dream Theater that were shredding. I mean, I'm an okay guitar player. I can hold my own, but I'm definitely not like a virtuoso.
You don't have any Yngwie records.
I do. I have some Yngwie stuff. I can never really play it though. I remember I almost bought a guitar with scallop frets.
Oof.
And I was like, this is cool. And yeah, looking back,
What is that?
This is a thing Yngwie did where you scoop out the fret so that
it's really ugly.
You
uglier
can play
than
faster theoretically because you're not like pressing it. I don't know, like, but I did have Billy Sheehan from Mr. Big had a signature Yamaha bass that I owned. That was actually a really cool bass. It was blue, and it had this weird reflective pickguard. But it was actually had some scallop frets on it. You can look it up, but it was actually like, it was a little ridiculous. But then I like got into hardcore, and everyone's like, "Dude, are you serious with that bass?" Like I had. So I had to get rid of it.
Jonah just basically sat here and told us about his infatuation with Tupperware. As far as...
But what does that mean?
just demasculated yourself in front of me. So
I had a Mr.
Are you saying
Big
men can't be into Tupperware? That's very sexist of you.
You're saying men can't be into Mr. Big?
Scalloped frets.
Scalloped frets, yeah.
Mr. Big with Billy Sheehan and
Mr. Big
and Paul Gilbert from Racer X.
Yes,
another guitar player's nerd band.
He is a nerd band. I got an email about him recently about a camp he was doing, and I forwarded it instantly to Going Off Track former guest John Worster, and that dude replied with, I can't remember what he said, but it was like the funniest thing ever. I feel like whenever I get a weird press release, I send it to him, and he's always online and always has like the funniest reply.
Speaking of funny, Trevor Moore.
It's going off track!
So what's up with the food burning? Because that's what they're doing in my neighborhood.
Food burning?
That seems just rude. The more serious Jews, as I'll call them, because I don't think they're all Hasidics, but they're definitely serious. They get these big barrels, and they start the morning burning, like, it seems like they're burning cheap Chinese furniture, so, because the neighborhood just smells like smoke and, like, burnt glue. And then as the day progresses, they bring out food and burn it. And I think that that's what they're supposed to be burning. The wood is just to get the fire started.
This is just for fun, or?
It's to rub it into the homeless people.
They burn, like, candy and stuff.
I think that's some kind of ritual sacrifice. It's not a part of the typical Jewish custom.
It's
burning
making
food.
I've always wondered.
That seems very wasteful. That kind of goes against it when you think about it.
I don't know.
I think it's
supposed
to be like goyim food or something. Yeah.
Speaking of goyim, Trevor Moore is here.
Hey, how are you?
What a good intro.
You like that? Comedian, writer, television filmmaker from Whitest Kids You Know, Miss March. And a very, very good television show with Christian Slater that I enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and it came back and went away and came back and went away.
Yeah, it had a really weird life. It got picked up, then it didn't get picked up.
Yeah.
Then they put it on, and then they canceled it, and then they brought it back, and then they changed the cast, and then they canceled it.
So. Must have been on Fox.
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Breaking In, right?
Yeah, Breaking In.
Mm-hmm. In my head, I was thinking Broken In, and I'm like, if I say that, I'm going to just look like a tool, so I have to keep talking until I remember correctly the title that I just said I was a fan of. But I did. I watched all the episodes. It was good.
Ah, thanks.
Then the one actor, she went to House.
Yeah.
And then House went away, and I was like, oh, rough break.
Yeah, well, that was like one of the times they canceled it, so she went to House, and then they... It was very tumultuous. That's not the right.
No, it's not. But we'll take it. So last time I spoke to you was, I think, Miss March. It just kind of.
I guess so.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's like 4 years ago.
Yeah, wowzy. That was that long ago.
Yeah, that was 2009.
Sweet Lord. And there's did you see Miss March?
No, I didn't.
Very funny, man. Craig Robinson is so funny.
Oh,
in
he's
that
awesome.
Movie. He plays a character named Horsedick.mpeg, and
he's a rapper.
He's a rapper.
Yeah.
But there's a scene in the movie, and I think it's just the best way to open a podcast, involving a gentleman awaking from a coma and all the excrement that's been stored up in him just flying out. And I said, that was so over the top, it cracked me up. And you said, and I quote, yeah, we use CGI.
I was very excited about it.
Yeah. For real.
Yeah.
You CGI'd poop.
Yep. Yep. I don't think that's what happens if someone is in a coma, though. It doesn't just store up inside of them.
No.
Like, we didn't do a lot of medical research before writing that.
Nope. Now, so you're from Charlottesville?
Yeah.
Right on. Good town.
Yeah, I loved it.
Great town to grow up. I'm from Northern Virginia.
Oh, okay, where?
In Springfield.
Okay.
So I've been down to Charlottesville many, many times.
Yeah.
Plan 9 Records.
Yeah. Yep.
Good store. So so you were born there. Did you move around a lot or born and raised in Charlottesville?
No, I was born in Jersey. But then my parents moved down there, and my parents were Christian folk singers. Mm. So I grew up on like a tour bus.
Really?
Yeah. We traveled around the country, and, we did that till I was like 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did they have at? Title was at a group.
It was called Mickey and Becky Moore. That was like my mom and dad's names. So, but yeah, they had like the number two Christian rock song in the country in like the 80s and stuff. So we like
really,
yeah, traveled around a whole bunch.
Did you ever perform with them?
Yeah, when I was a kid, they that was part of the bit, the act. They don't call it a bit, but like, I'd come up and I'd sing one of the songs, and then like when it was around the age of like 6 or 7, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore, so I quit.
This little light of mine gets old real quick.
Yeah.
Wow, so they toured all over the country?
Yeah.
So you were rocking in a tour bus at that age.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I lived in a motorhome.
Wow. Yeah. And so were you, was it any specific kind of Christianity? Was it evangelical, fundamentalist?
Yeah, I was evangelical.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Boy, those kind of concerts must have been...
Yeah,
that's the word I'm looking for.
What is the word you're looking for?
Revivals. That's the word I'm looking
yeah,
for. It was like a revival.
Yeah, they would play big like festivals, and there would be all sorts of like crazy people, like
handlers. Please,
no, not like that.
Damn.
Not like that. I mean, there would be every now and then. You know, my we had a Satanist guy come to live with us. When I was a kid,
for kicks.
No, my parents were trying to like witness to him. And I guess Satanism was like big in the 80s. So they like brought,
yep.
So they had the Satanist guy come to live with us. And I was a kid and like, so I just thought the guy was weird. And so he had this room downstairs. And then one day there's this big like break, like sound, like this big crash. And they went down and like his bed was broken. And he was like, demons came in and they broke my bed. And then my parents were like, well, I don't know. I think you broke your bed. Like, so he got kicked out.
Yeah. Can you get the demons to pay for it?
It's a great idea. You know, yeah. I would just start being like, oh, demons ate all of the
between like being born again and Satanism, you could get away with pretty much anything.
Yeah, it's all about passing blame.
I need to get into this, man.
I need a pillow top mattress. Why? Well, the demons say without it, my back will be too straight and I should be uncomfortable.
Wow, that's insane. Yeah. And I mean insane in a very nice, compassionate way towards people of faith.
Yeah.
So when you had the Satanists live in your house, was that the moment you decided comedy's the way for me?
No, it was much after that. I just, kind of accepted it all as like, you know, hey, that's what happens around here.
When did it start for you?
I don't know. I guess around 12, I started really liking getting into comedy or realizing that comedy was a thing mm-hmm. that you could do as a job. I think like Weird Al was like one of the first people that was like, oh, that's what this guy does for work.
He's the gateway, man. Me too.
So many people, like, yeah, especially like I think our age, like everybody, like kind of he's their first.
The first cassette I ever bought was Dare to Be Stupid.
Yeah.
And it's a good record. It sounds very good.
Solid.
Holds up. Holds
it
up.
Still holds up. Yeah. Yoda to the Kinks Lola will never get old.
Yeah.
Never get old.
You know what's crazy about Weird Al is I think this is true, but every album he puts out does better than the last one. Like, he has this weird arc where, like, you know, they just keep selling more and more and more because people are so, like, diehard that they keep buying his old fans keep buying his new stuff, but then he just keeps making new fans because he's parodying whatever the pop
right.
thing of the time is. So it just keeps, it's like a
That's a really smart way to kind of stay relevant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever
smart?
Yeah.
Did you ever see him perform?
Yeah. I saw him once at the Greek in Los Angeles. It was insane.
Yeah, it's great.
It was like 3.5 hours long. I counted 17 costume changes. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous.
And then he does sketches in between, the film sketches?
Yeah. Like he shows videos like where he does fake interviews with people and stuff.
Yeah, oh, they're so funny.
Yeah.
Takes found footage and then inserts his stuff like, you know, you're kind of dumb, right?
Yeah.
He's really funny. Okay, so Weird Al. Who else? Who are other comedy guys?
Monty Python was like a huge thing.
I'm unfamiliar.
Oh, it's really good. It's like a British Saturday Night
Live. Are they Canadian?
Canada-British.
They're like the other Canadians.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the original British. The original Canadians.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
I got it. They're old school Canadians.
Canadian OGs? I didn't think they were for real. Yeah, I remember that. When you get into Monty Python, I remember my dad watching it before I saw The Holy Grail.
Yeah. That's how I got into it. Yeah. My dad would turn me on to it.
Oh, my dad would turn around and say, why are you awake? Because it was on late at night on PBS.
Right. Yeah.
And my parents wouldn't let me watch like much television at all.
Really?
Like, you know, but that was okay.
That
I think it was because it was PBS.
That's
and
hilarious. That's totally how I got into it too.
Yeah.
Because we were allowed to watch like very minimal TV, but almost anything on PBS was fair game.
And it was all British accents, so it all seemed smart, and a lot of it was about history, so it just went under the radar where that was okay for us.
We're learning about the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
Did they?
No one expects the Spanish
Was there a
Inquisition.
Lot of limiting of, like, you know, reading and television and movies and things growing up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They just, like, anything with, if it said, like, damn, I wasn't supposed to watch it. Yeah. Pretty strict.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what did you watch as a child?
I had this dog that was cool. So I like, what? I watch Monty Python and that's about it.
Wow.
Yeah. Star Wars. I watch Star Wars a lot.
Oh, yeah. They allow that.
Yeah.
Because the Force, you know, is God, I guess. Now it's midichlorians in your blood.
Yeah. They got science into it.
Nah, I blew it. Totally blew it. I'm taking us down a bad path here with that. Should avoid that immediately. So before Whitest Kids started, where'd you go to school?
I went to the school in New York, School of Visual Arts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right on. And were you doing comedy then as well? Because I remember talking to you guys and asking about improv and UCB and stuff, and I think the whole group went, nope.
Yeah, we had a weird kind of path where we started doing sketch at the School of Visual Arts, and we would just do everything as like a school club. Like we founded Whitest Kids as a SVA club, and because we'd get like $700 a month, $700 a semester from the school board. So we would just spend it on like beer and cigarettes and stuff.
Genius.
So we were doing like shows once a month at school, but we never did the whole UCB route. They've always been really nice to us. Like when we were up for going to the Aspen Comedy Awards, when they were thinking about having us, the UCB let us do our show at their theater. And I do shows at the UCB theater in LA all the time, but none of us ever took any of the classes.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, when I keep jumping back about, you know, how you grew up and things, was there, you know, every teen rebels. That must have been, did you rebel hard against your Christian folk singer parents?
I mean, I don't know. I never was like, I'm rebelling, but like, you know, I mean, from the show I make, you know, and you know, I guess I did rebel, like to a certain extent. Yeah. Like,
say, did you store it up and wait till you went to the School of Visual Arts? Cause that seems very progressive of your parents to support that.
Well, you know? They were weird. They were like, you know, they were very strict, but then they also weren't strict in some ways. Like I never had a curfew, which was bizarre. Like, you know, and, I started doing a public access show when I was like 16, and I did that all the time, and I stopped coming home because I would sleep at public access, or I'd sleep at my dad's office in town, and then I'd go to school. So I'd come home like three nights a week.
Your dad had an office. They'd stop being the folk singer.
Yeah,
at that
they
point.
Stopped doing that around when I was like 12.
Okay.
So he was a graphic designer, and I would just like crash at his office, and then go to school in the morning, and then go back to public access after school, and you know, so they were kind of hands off in some areas, but you know, then very very strict in others. So.
What was the public access show?
It was me just going around kind of just messing with people in town. Like I'd do sketches, but then I'd also just kind of prank call people and just kind of hide cameras places and just mess with people. And it got bought, actually. I did it till I was like 18, and it was really popular with the UVA crowd. And so then this guy who owned a bunch of PAX television affiliates,
yeah,
he bought the show and put it on his station. So for a year... after high school, I got paid just to make my TV show.
What was it called?
It was called The Trevor Moore Show. And then,
good name.
Yeah. Pretty good. And then, that got canceled because PAX was a very Christian family, you know, network. So,
whoops.
Yeah.
So your parents were stoked. Oh, he's on the Christian network.
Yeah. Oh, that's what he's doing over there. Yeah.
So, what was it like when you kind of showed up at SVA? Kind of, was it overwhelming to kind of be away from home, or was it just like typical college?
It was fine. No, I didn't find it that overwhelming. Like, I, you know, traveled a lot, you know, because we were on the road a bunch. And then, you know, I would come up here a lot. My dad used to do work up here, so I'd always come up with him. And, you know, again, with them kind of being strict in some areas and not strict in others, I'd come into the city with him, and then he was going to be doing business meetings all day. So then he'd just give me money, like, here's like $40. Meet me back here at the end of the night, and I just walk around New York as like a kid, like by myself.
Did they just think God was watching you?
I don't know. Like, or they're just like, you know,
faith will keep him safe.
Yeah. Or I could have been really annoying, and they're like, no one's going to want to molest that kid. Like, you know, like
that kid's
unmolestable. That one.
That's terrible and funny.
Show title, Unmolestable. Yeah, we have to call this Unmolestable.
Unmolestable with Trevor Moore on PAX.
Show titles, and then we never actually
end, so. So you're just wandering around New York for years, and then did you decide this is where I wanted to go to school?
Yeah, I always, like, love New York, so.
I think a lot of people have that same feeling.
Yeah, especially if you, like, come from the middle of nowhere. Like, you know, because I didn't live in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. I lived about 30 miles out of Charlottesville.
Oh, yikes.
And, like, Louisa, which is, like, nothing there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's a mile to your next neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the contrast of going from there to New York, it was like, this is amazing.
And especially living out there, yeah, you'll do a cable access show because you're bored.
Oh, yeah. And you're not allowed to watch TV, so you got to make something you can watch.
I wonder
watch.
If anyone's done this before, because I've never seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, you think
So you show up in college, you've already done 1,000 times more than anyone who's just started college, having a cable access show, mm-hmm. doing your own comedy stuff. Oh, it was bought by a cable network. It's happened to no one here presently. And so
they let me skip a year.
What?
They let me skip a year.
Really?
Yeah. Because they were like, well, you don't need introduction of video, you know, or any of that stuff. So I got to skip a bunch of classes.
Did you edit everything yourself?
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
You're one of these smart, ambitious people.
Yeah. I love editing. Editing is actually one of my favorite things wow. to do. Like these music videos that I'm doing for this album, mm-hmm. it was cool because I got to edit them again.
Oh, wow.
Which was nice because I haven't edited. I wanted to edit like the Whitest Kids stuff, mm-hmm. but you just can't with like the schedule that you're on because mm-hmm. they have to be cutting them while you're shooting. And mm-hmm. so it was nice to be able to go back and edit some of these things.
So Whitest Kids started as the group at SVA, mm-hmm. and then you started doing sketches around town. And how long was it? How long was Whitest Kids doing things before Aspen?
Well, the group founded in 2000.
Okay.
At school, and then we around 2004 we started doing a weekly show at Pianos, mm-hmm. And we just tried to write a new show every week. So then people started coming back, and we kind of got a good following from that because you could go every week and it would be something new. And then I think we did Aspen in 2006. So it was about a two-year window of us just playing pianos every week. And that's how we got to go on Fuse.
Dude, I heard just rumblings of it. And at the time, when there was this great year at Fuse where Jen Caserta was running it.
Yeah, she's the best.
She's the greatest human being ever.
Yeah.
And diehard Misfits fan, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, super big Danzig fan.
That's interesting.
It's hilarious. So she, hearing rumblings about it, and I remember working there going, comedy show? Okay. And I found one of the scripts, and I was lying around.
Oh,
it was
really?
Somebody left it at a copier, and I was like, I took them, and I read them all, and I was like, dude, these guys are really funny. And then I went down, and then I talked to the crew. Because you guys took over the set and the studio and
That's
everything.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And so we weren't shooting anything. We were out in the field for a while. So I remember sneaking in and walking around, and I saw the set for, I guess, the astronaut takeoff.
Yeah.
The one. Man, that's so funny.
That was a crazy set.
Yeah.
It was like a huge cylinder, and we only got one take at it.
Really?
Like, yeah, because it was the sketch we're in a space shuttle, like, facing up in the air like we're about to take off, and then I'm like eating all this food. It's a really simple idea where it's just eating all this food, but it's just falling down and getting on everybody. But because of the reset time that it would take, and we were shooting like a lot of sketches every
yes.
day on that thing, that we only had one shot to do it. So
you drop a gallon jug of milk like on one of the dudes.
Yeah, it hits Darren right in the chest. Yeah.
It's very, very, very funny.
Yeah.
Oh, it killed me. It was great to see that. And you worked with, did Dave Diabetti shoot those? Did he direct those with you guys?
I don't know. I don't know that he might have directed the stage direction for the in studio stuff.
Oh, no, wait. You got, no, wait.
We directed.
You
Zach
directed
and I directed
Yeah,
back,
you directed
but there was
yeah.
a guy who was doing kind of the camera, calling the camera shots
yes.
on the stage.
Yeah.
That was really weird because that was the only time we shot like in a studio like that mm-hmm. was that very first like 2 weeks that we were doing it. And then everything else we moved to just be on
right.
location for
mm-hmm.
the rest of the series.
How many of the sketches, because would you do a lot of YouTube stuff before?
Yeah, we would put like, that was something that really kind of helped us out a lot was that YouTube started, I think YouTube started around 2003, but it was like right around that time. And when we started doing the shows at Pianos. Mm-hmm. So we would put our videos up on our website and then kids would put them up on YouTube. Like to this day, we don't have an official YouTube channel. Like we just let other people put them up, which isn't a really good idea, but but like we would get all these views and it's just from, you know, people putting them like up, and that's kind of how like we got like word of mouth going around.
Because I think it was the Saturday one was the first one I saw
yeah.
on YouTube. So he wakes up in the morning on Saturday, but he's a grown man. He's like, it's Saturday!
Yeah.
He starts running all over the place, and his wife is nonplussed.
Yes. Yeah, we did that before we had
yeah.
the show. Yeah.
Wow, before. And you guys won Aspen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
2006.
Yeah. 2006 Aspen. Oh, it's so great. How many seasons of Whitest Kids were on IFC?
Four, and then one on Fuse.
Yes.
So we ended up doing 5 seasons. So.
Yeah, it was the same company for a while.
Yeah, they're not the same company anymore.
No, well, it's a weird, like, one of those business, they split it off. So Fuse is part of MSG, which is still under
Jim Dolan's banner, but
right.
Cablevision, but IFC is part of this group called Rainbow Media.
Right.
So it's like Fuse went over here, and then IFC and AMC just started doing nothing cool. Nothing interesting. Yeah. What, Mad Men and Breaking Bad make you snore, Brad? Breaking.
Just, I hadn't said anything.
Brad.
I'm just trying. I'm here.
I just watch True TV and Spike now.
Boy,
yeah. Yeah.
I just did a pilot. I'm doing a really? Pilot right now for True TV. We just shot it and now we're
really?
Editing it. Yeah.
What's the idea?
It's all hidden camera.
I got really into Impractical Jokers. Do you ever watch that show?
It's a really funny show.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's like really fast jokes. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guy who runs True TV was one of the dudes who ran Fuse years ago.
Really?
He's the guy that changed the name.
I didn't know that.
A guy named Mark Juris.
Huh.
Yeah.
It used to be Court TV, right?
Used to be Court TV.
And really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what
it,
True was.
He switched it to True. T-R-U. Because the E would confuse everyone. I have no idea how that works. So wait, you did a pilot for True TV?
Yeah.
And then you got the record?
Yeah.
The album coming out?
That comes out today, actually.
Oh,
yeah. Cool.
Thanks for coming by.
Oh, no problem.
Brad, you got to post this quick.
Yeah,
really.
Can you post this today?
How long have you been working on the record?
A while. Like, I started writing it, I guess, about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And then I recorded it last summer. Mm-hmm. And then just been doing music videos for it. Like, and they had a new music video just came out today. And so,
and you're writing and directing all those?
Yeah. Yeah.
And editing.
Yeah. but it's been fun. Yeah. I would do two or three songs a year, on Whitest Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was part of the season. Like there'd be two or three music videos. So I just kind of went to Comedy Central and was like, I'd like to do like an album that's not one genre. Like it's like, you know, rap, country, dubstep, you know, metal. And they were like, sure, go do it. So.
That's all it takes?
Yeah. Just go in and go.
Did you play the instruments or did you bring in other people? Or
no, I worked with these guys, the Elegant Two. They're like New York guys. They did a whole bunch of – they do a lot of the music for Bob's Burgers. They've worked with They Might Be Giants.
Yeah.
You remember the band Skeleton Key?
Yes.
One of the guys, Chris Maxwell, was from that band.
Oh, really? Did you ever see that video they did? They did this video, I think it was them, with Brian Posehn. Where they have like a budget and they like, never mind, if you didn't see it, but it's really funny.
That sounds
But they're
cool.
An awesome band.
It's not that this isn't metal song. Brian was saying, okay.
No.
So you got those dudes who come in and write songs.
Yeah. And they're, I mean, they, I worked with them through Whitest Kids too. Like, you know, they would do the music like in Whitest Kids. So I would like write the songs and like hum the melodies into like onto an MP3 file and then email it to them. Because I was in New York, in LA, and they were in New York. And then they start working on the music, and then came in here, and we just recorded it over like 2 weeks. And
so to get a record on Comedy Central, you just ask them, and then to write the songs, you just hum them.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's how music works.
That's how it works, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's neat.
I've been overproducing for a long time.
Yeah.
Just turn all this stuff off, man.
Yeah, I know.
We need half of this. When did Whitest Kids end?
2011.
2011. Just you guys decided run was done, or
yeah, it was kind of like we, you know, had done 5 seasons, and it seemed to be like when all the other comedy troupes stopped doing shows. Like a lot of comedy troupes ended 5 seasons, mm-hmm. And we were sort of like, you know, we don't want to get to the point where okay, this is another sketch about a wife cheating on a husband kind of thing. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to start reusing like ideas. And so we kind of had been toying around with this idea of doing like this, just movies. So we did the Civil War on Drugs. I don't know if you saw mm-hmm. that. The last season that we did, we made a feature-length film and chopped it up and put 10 minutes in every episode.
Ah, nice.
So then when you finish the whole season, you know, we had this whole feature-length film about the Civil War that we had done. And we really liked that. And so what we wanted...
I saw a couple of Civil War sketches.
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of stuff. Mm. Kind of have an obsession with the Civil War.
You from Virginia?
Yeah. That's where it comes from. So, you know, we kind of wanted to move more towards, you know, doing just if we did another season, we just wanted to make it two movies where it splits up, and you know, half of the episode is one movie, half is another. And I think, you know, IFC was not, you know, crazy about that idea. And, you know, we were kind of, it was just kind of like everybody was like, all right, let's just move on. And so now we're writing another Whitest Kids film that's kind of in that vein of the Civil War on Drugs. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. So the group is still together. You're just not doing the television thing. That's good.
Yeah, okay. We're in the middle of like a 30-city tour right now. Like we just did the Gramercy last night.
That's the thing. You guys, I remember when you toured for Fuse.
Yeah.
And I saw you at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Well, I heard you. There was a lot of people there. I couldn't quite see.
That was nuts.
Yeah.
When we toured for Fuse, because we didn't have a TV show yet. And they were like, you guys should go and open for Flogging Molly for 6 weeks on the road. And everyone who goes to see Flogging Molly, that's their favorite band.
Yeah, like those, I was going to say,
those fans
I would
are
never
hardcore.
Want to open they're all Flogging drunk. Molly
yeah,
ever.
They're all drunk. They're all like, you know, fighty guys.
Yeah.
Too. So it's like soccer chants. Like, so for 6 weeks, this is what happened. Like, we were just going around the country and there's a soccer chant. Like, oh, people like stomping the floor waiting for Flogging Molly to come out. And so then we'd come out and we don't have a show or anything yet. So we're like, hi, you guys ready to see Flogging Molly? And it was like, ah, and we're like, okay, well, first we're going to do some sketches. I'm a girl and he's a guy. He's my date in this. And then like people would just be like whipping bottles at us and stuff. Like, so like literally like 5 dates into it, we were just kind of like, this is not working. Like we have to change everything. So I would just like come out and just start drinking whiskey on stage. And then everyone's like, yeah. And then we'd throw a whiskey bottle into the audience. People are like, yeah. And then we just kind of developed these like hype man like characters where you're like, you ready to see Flogging Molly? And then just kind of work those into a comedy bit. Like, so we just
had to kind of improvise it. It's like comedy survival.
It. Yeah.
That's
because they
awesome.
Wanted to kill us.
At least the Flogging Molly guys are cool.
Yeah, they were nice.
Yeah, they're very nice.
Yeah, those guys are cool.
You did the South by was a great show, but I remember watching going, they look tired.
Yeah, yeah. 6 weeks is a long time.
Yeah, I mean, touring is just rough. And you do that a lot, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, but we don't do it like that anymore. Like, we had to, for that and for the Miss March, we did, both of them were six-week tours where we were on a bus for 6 weeks and just driving around. So now what we do is we try to go out for, we'll go out for 4 days, and then we'll come back for like 4 days and then go back out for, so we'll just do little clusters. Like, we'll hit 4 cities in Florida, go fly back home, and then go and we'll hit like the Northeast. So
you treat it like wrestling.
Yeah.
That's exactly how like the WWE works. They're home for 3 days, and then the rest of it they're touring and traveling and working, and then they're home for 3 days.
That's awesome. That's you why guys, wrestlers are so happy.
They're very happy.
Yeah.
Very happy, and nothing bad ever happens. Nothing.
I know you want to say something so horrible, I feel like.
No. Because everybody's thinking it.
Yeah.
I don't have to say it.
I don't think anything ever bad has ever happened.
Do you guys get along pretty well? Because I've been in a lot of bands that have toured together, and I know how people can grate on you, and just the way they like breathe can like make you go crazy.
Yeah.
Do you guys for the most part get along?
Yeah, but that happens too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's the same. I mean, we've been doing it for 13 years. So it's just sort of, that's like, you know, it's just like family members at this point where, you know, you're like, you love everybody. And but you can also be like, oh my God, I cannot stand you right now. But it's fine. It's not like, you know, it'll be fine in, you know, the next day, I think.
Now, Miss March, that wasn't Whitest Kids.
No, that was just Zach and I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, but were the other guys involved in it at all?
No, that was like a weird thing where Fox Atomic, which doesn't exist anymore. Like, they had this script, and they came to us, and they were like, you know, would you guys want to do this script? And, you know, Zach and I were like, not really. But they were like, you can rewrite it. And we were like, oh, okay. So then we, like, rewrote it, but it was based off of this existing script, so we kind of just tried to make it a little more our
sensibility. The way to make a movie is a film company just comes to you and says, hey, do you want to make one?
Yeah.
And you say, not that one. They go, well, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
I have a very good memory.
Napkin doodles and see if you can get into the Met.
Yeah.
I'm doing everything wrong.
How you make a nuclear bomb is you just get like a whole bunch of like super, like just bombs and put them together.
We're going to have to edit that out. Yes. We can't have that out there.
I can't tell all my information is just super simplified and wrong.
Just figure it out when it comes to you. Yeah. So there's this Israeli-Palestinian conflict. How are we going to do it? I don't know. Is Trevor around? Is he still on to...
Okay, you guys are both being like super dicks to each other.
We're going to have a little mixer.
Yeah. Here's the rule. Everybody has to be nice to everybody. And, you know, no one can have bombs anymore.
And let's not talk about religion at the party.
Stop talking about it.
And by the way, neither of you eat pork. Common ground. Hang out. Have some chicken. Shut up. That's kind of where we need to devolve right now is international talks right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trevor's here. Let's solve some shit.
Yeah. Do you want?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to put your guys' religious book and your guys' religious book in the same book. And now you guys like the same book. So everybody's cool.
What we're saying is it's all about packaging.
Yeah.
All right. So the series ends. You guys are doing a movie now. It's in the vein of the Civil War and drugs. Is everyone spread out? So you're in LA and here?
Yeah, I live in LA.
Why is that funny?
Sorry, Brad just dumped all this water on himself.
Oh, is that why?
And then like looked around to see if anyone saw and then saw that I was staring right at him. Sorry, didn't
mean to interrupt. Professionalism.
I'm like 5 years old today.
I just thought, I feel like that's, I'm you every other day. So it was nice to see someone else.
I've been doing this all morning, this kind of stuff.
Spilling things on
like, I should take my first five emails that I wrote today and put them aside for some people to read because they're just silly. I was in no mood this morning.
My favorite Brad thing is we were doing the podcast and some guy came in who was recording here in the studio and he went, "Hey man, do you mind if I light some incense in the room?" And Brad just goes, "No! No, in fact, don't light anything on fire ever here or anywhere. Just, no, dude."
You like that because it sounds exactly like what you would say.
Yeah. Like what I'd want to say. Incense shouldn't exist. So do you all live near each other?
No. Timmy lives in South Dakota.
Like wow. You do?
Yeah. Darren lives in New York. And mm-hmm. then Zach, Sam, and I live in L.A.
So. Okay. So we're best in L.A.?
I live in Echo Park.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very up and coming.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
When I lived there, it wasn't.
Really? Did you live there?
I lived in Los Feliz, mid-90s to like early aughts.
Okay.
You know, about, and Echo Park was where you would go to get heroin and passport photos.
Yeah. That's why I moved there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Because I love heroin, and the thing about if you love heroin, you keep losing your passport.
It's very pretty.
Yeah.
Echo Park is a really nice area.
Is that near Silver Lake or is that part of?
Yeah. Okay. I live right on the border of like Echo Park and Silver Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of blew up in a nice way and all these bands started playing in teeny tiny little venues that got bigger. And it was when that like Silver Sun and Airborne Toxic started coming out.
I remember Spaceland is what, the satellite or something now?
Yeah.
Or I think it's called something else.
Yeah, it's still space oriented.
Okay.
So that you know you're not getting too confused. Because it is LA.
Yeah. It
you is don't want to make any, radical changes. It's gonna confuse people. The present company center, of course.
Now with Comedy Central, so with the album, is there gonna be a special?
No, we just did the album and I shot a bunch of music videos that were just releasing one at a time.
Will that go on Comedy Central or?
I don't know. There's no plans at the moment to. Mm. I'd like to, put them all, once I have them all done, put them into something that could perhaps live, elsewhere besides.
Do you write everything by yourself or do you collaborate with someone? I know with the Whitest Kids, but on your stuff, is it just all you?
Yeah, I just write the songs myself and then, the Elegant too, they like work out a lot of the hooks and the instrumentation of everything. Like,
what's your music background?
I can play a little bit of guitar, but not well. Like we actually, I just know chords. Just a couple weeks ago, I did a show in Boston where we played the album. And the show was on a Wednesday. And then Monday, I was like, oh, I got to learn how to play these songs. So I started like figuring out the chords for it. And I realized that I had a show that I was supposed to do the next night. And I was like, I don't even know if I can play guitar and sing at the same time. Because I like literally never really tried to do that.
I've had that dream so many times.
I was going to say, that's
dude,
my
dream. So many times.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
I was like really busy and doing a bunch of stuff. And then it got to the thing where it was like, and I called him. Like, oh, how is the ticket sales? And they're like, oh, good, we're gonna have like a full house. And I was like, okay, all right. So it goes like, is this A? I think that's A. You know,
at least the album wasn't out yet, so it's like you can make a mistake and no one knows yet.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had another guy playing too.
Okay.
So I turned him up a little more than I was turned up.
So do you have you done stand up at all, or is that not really your background? Or
no, I've done it, but I don't regularly do it. Like I've kind of always been more of a video sort of guy. Like I like to just film sketches and put them up.
And writing the songs, do you have comedy songs, and having some friends who do it and have talked to people. My one critique about comedic songs is that they're always the same length as like a regular song,
right?
Quote unquote pop song or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just think sometimes that's too long.
Yeah.
For that.
Well, choruses.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to change the chorus, the words in the chorus. You got to keep having it be new jokes, or you're just, you know, repeating jokes. Because if the whole thing is about the joke, then choruses kind of lose their point.
When you write the songs in different genres, as you say, what music do you gravitate towards? What do you like to listen to?
I go through phases, but you know, I'm right now I'm obsessed with Funkadelic. I've just been listening to their stuff over and over and over and over again. Like I want to do an album that's like almost a complete, like one genre Funkadelic album, just because I think those things are so layered and they have so many different stuff going on in there. You can almost have all the different, you could do a Funkadelic album and have it feel like you're doing all these genres anyway. So that's,
and then to be able to say, we'd like a spaceship on stage.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, and just so you know, you're not going to be able to play bass on that. No. Okay. Yeah. Let's just please.
You know what I think is interesting though, and we've talked about this a lot in the podcast, is like when you see a comedian, you want to hear new stuff. When you see a band, you want to hear what you know, and you're kind of doing something in the middle. Do you feel like people want to hear new material, or do they get excited when it's something they recognize, or does it depend?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. I mean, that's like I don't know. I mean, that's something that we constantly talk about within the group, because whenever we go out on tour, we're like, oh, we should do a whole bunch of new stuff. And then it's sort of like, yeah, but, you know, if we do a whole bunch of new stuff, people are going to, you know, every time we do a show, people come up afterwards and like, you didn't do this sketch, or you didn't do this sketch, or you didn't do this sketch.
And so, you say, fuck you, you're not in the group. You're already paid, leave me alone.
So, like, what we end up doing is we do the fan favorites, the ones that, like, have a lot of YouTube hits, and then we'll do some, like, deep cuts from the show, because we have, like, 500 sketches, like, from five seasons. And then we'll try to work, like, a couple new things in there, but, yeah, but it's weird, like, because when we do sketches, like, you'll start a line, and then everybody starts laughing or applauding, like, because they get what sketch is. And so it's weird. It's
500 to draw from. That's crazy.
Yeah. Would you try to make sure that, like, if we're hitting the same city, like, we're doing Boston. We did Boston a couple nights ago when we did Boston last year. So we're like, okay, let's go remember what we did in Boston and make sure that we're doing something different, so there's not seeing the exact same show when they come.
That's got to be crazy to have the greatest hits of sketches that people want to see over and over.
Right.
But that involves you and other people. I don't know. That's exactly like being in a band.
Yeah.
And you got a set list with your sketches.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the way, I think, you know, we always want to try to have some new stuff in there, but, you know, I think, I have the old video of, like, Monty Python at the Hollywood Bowl, and it's just greatest hit stuff, you know, kind of. So, I don't know. But, yeah, we constantly debate whether or not, like, you know, do we have enough new stuff in here? You know, should we be doing more old stuff, that kind of thing.
Is it pretty much word for word, or is there any level of improvisation in the...
Yeah, no, we don't do a word for word, because then that would just be... really boring, like just for our own sanity.
Right.
Like we should change it up, and you know, because I mean, we switch endings. You know, we change it within the sketch, but you know, sometimes we'll do the sketch, but you know, try to throw each other off, basically, try to screw each other up.
That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you try to throw in new lines to make the other person laugh.
That you can't do in a band.
you get fired.
I said C. Yeah, well. Yeah.
Threw you off.
Adapt. So you're going to, you said you played a show with this stuff. Are you going to tour?
Yeah.
Just you doing these songs?
Well, I'm actually.
Get a band.
I'm, yeah. Well, I've got Sam and Darren. Mm-hmm. From the troupe. They're kind of traveling with me on some dates. I'm going to do 5 shows in Indiana this weekend where we're just doing the album. And then, you know, Sam's playing guitar and Darren's doing drums. And I'm playing guitar not as well as Sam. And so, yeah, we're doing that. And then we'll do a couple sketches in between, but it's mostly the music. But,
well, that's super cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
In between that, working on a movie. Now, what? So the Fox show's done.
Yeah.
Okay, done.
Yeah.
So any of the television shows on the horizon?
Just this one that I'm, you know, this pilot that I'm working on with True TV.
True, but nothing like where you doing a character and acting?
No. Mm.
So this is hidden cameras,
you said?
Is it like candid camera? Do you do anything to interact?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I'm doing characters in this show where basically I'm just pretending to be, you know, we're basically just setting people up in sketches, but they just don't know that they're in a sketch,
right,
or that they're on television, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So
when that happens, do you have to get them to sign a release after?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it ever happen where people won't sign it?
Yeah.
Do you have like a technique for being like,
yeah,
sign this?
Well, the thing what we do is, with the show is we make sure that everybody is being set up by a friend of theirs. So it's somebody being like, oh, I think you should get my buddy, you know, so-and-so. So we have them there. So we kind of do this whole bit. And then once it gets to the point where they're, you know, really upset, then we'd be like, A, you're on TV, and B, your friend set you up on this, and then all anger is deflected. You know, now they're just upset at their friend and stuff. So
while they're yelling, you just put a pen in their hand and a piece of paper in front.
No, they literally say, like, with these type of shows, like, you have 10 minutes to get them a sign. Get them the contract, get them to sign it within 10 minutes.
Wow.
But honestly, like, you know, we've shot 2 episodes, and everybody like enjoyed it. Like there was one person who came back and was like, I regret signing that. Can I have it back? And we just gave it back to her and said, sure. You know, we don't want to use it if people are not going to. I mean, we don't want to ruin someone's you know, day. So
that's cool.
No, we do want to ruin their day. We don't want to ruin their life. That's what it is. That's what it is. Right,
fair enough. That makes a lot of sense. And what's that called? Trevor Moore Show?
We're still figuring out the title.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, it's not. We'll call it that. Yeah.
Did you ever put that out on DVD, the old cable access one?
No, I don't. Because I watch them back and they're kind of embarrassing. Like, because I'm like 16 to like 17. So just kind of learning like comedy. And it's like, you know, I wouldn't want to put them on.
No.
DVD. No, they're not that great.
Yeah. So when you're doing the group, when White House Kids first started, it was just, met guys randomly at school? Like, did you know anybody beforehand?
No.
No?
No, it was just guys that, we all live in the same dorm. That was like it.
Like, I got a camera. What are you doing this weekend?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. That was, I was doing stand up at the UCB at an open mic, and Sam was there, and we were both like freshmen, like in first week of September of being in school. So, like, no one really knew anybody. You're still trying to make friends. And Sam came up afterwards and was like, I really liked your, you know, stand-up you did. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And so then that's how I knew him. And that's why I'd run into him every now and then. And, you know, we kind of became friends. And he had met Zach, and Zach had met Darren. And then I met Timmy on 9/11, which was the next year. It was like a weird everybody just kind of living in the same dorm.
Very aptly named group.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Whole lot of white dudes.
Yep. That's
who named you? Wasn't there a story behind that?
There's like 5 stories because no one really agrees on how it happened. the general consensus is that we were in this period of trying to find a name, and we had a whole bunch of terrible names, and we couldn't
It's just like a band.
Yeah.
The whole thing is like a band. Yeah. I love it.
And we couldn't come to a consensus on, like, we'd try a name out for a little bit and be like, eh, it sucked. And then we were doing something really stupid, and somebody said to us, you know, you guys are the whitest kids I know. And we were like, okay, that'll work, you know. And we all hate that name. Like, at this point, like, you know, a couple of years in, we were like, I don't like this name anymore. Like, but at that point, we had already, you know, been doing it too long to change names. So,
key to a successful band, have a crappy name that you loathe.
Yep.
Really?
That's true.
Foo Fighters much?
They hate that name.
Oh, it's a bad name.
It's a terrible name.
Radiohead is one of the worst band names I can think of. Like, you know, or the Beatles is a terrible name. Beatles with an A? Yeah. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I interviewed Matt Skiba yesterday. Uh-huh. And he was talking about the new Alkaline Trio record, and he said they almost called it "The Rhythm Is Gonna Get You Killed."
Them and the puns.
Wow. No, they love puns. I was like, "Did you have any other good puns?" Because it's called what's it called? Something. My aim is true, but there's a word is different.
Oh, probably my wound is true. If it's Matt,
yeah, it's something that really dark. But yeah, I thought the rhythm is going to get you killed. It's
funny. That's very funny. Well, they had that one record, The Agony and the Irony.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's that from? And they went, oh, we're making fun of Ebony and Ivory. And I went, okay, I'll take it.
Damnesia. Cool. Yeah. They got some, they like puns.
They're not going to be able to do any better than the record, God Damn It. There's nothing. Not going to be able to.
That's true.
Such a good record, too. That's an interesting thing. I saw them, to segue back into what you do when you tour, is they'll play like a record all the way through.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever done a sketch show where it's like, this was one episode of Whitest Kids and just blazed through it?
I saw the Pixies do that. They took a sketch show and they just did all the way through.
Wow. Yeah. Frank Black is very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could pull it off.
Yeah.
They could do anything.
No, but I saw them do all of Doolittle once and it was really cool because it's like all in order and you're like, and then it goes into that song and they did it. That's cool. Like, yeah. You know?
I don't like track 6. Go to pee.
Go to the bathroom.
I think I like how bands do that now. Like album tours and things. I remember the first band I heard doing it was Cheap Trick years ago, and they just moved into the Roxy in L.A. and would do a different album a night. You know,
right?
That's awesome.
Which meant what, one hit a night, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know though. I've seen some and they're great, and then I've seen some and I'm like halfway through, so I'm like, there's a lot of songs on I forgot about that I don't like.
Right.
You know what I mean? That they usually don't play.
Yeah, that's the only downside of that. It's got to be the right band and the right album.
Yes.
But you also know when you write a record that there's going to be at least two songs on there, you're not going to play live ever in your career. So imagine that's the same with filming a sketch, like taking a sketch that you've edited and put together. You're not going to be able to do that on stage. Have you had to do that to translate them to performing?
Oh, yeah. Like when we did the first season of the show, there's all these sketches that we had been doing for years on stage that we were like, well, half of these we can't use, you know, because they're not, you know, right for television. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these sketches that we've done, you know, on the show that we would love to do live, but it takes place in too many locations because, you know, you're cutting around and stuff. So
the pirate sketch live is hilarious.
Yeah. That was the live one first that we adapted for the show.
I saw it. That's the one I saw at South By.
Oh, yeah.
That I could see from all the tall people like you who stood in front of me.
Right.
And I'm not short. Very annoying. Stand at the damn back. We talked about this.
Yeah. Never go to a Ween show.
Yeah. Never go to a Ween show.
All tall fans?
All tall people.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what that is.
I don't know.
I've been to a Ween show. I like Ween.
Yeah. See, of course you have. You're tall. Yeah.
I saw Ween. But I guess maybe.
Up, right? I don't know. Did they break up?
I think they broke up.
Okay.
They broke up or they just said these are our real names.
Yeah. They're a pretty good band.
They were fun. I saw them open for the Foo Fighters.
Oh, really?
Years ago. Yeah. And who opened for them? Jawbreaker. So why did I go? It's our first tour. Tons of fun. So playing Indiana, 5 shows this weekend. And you sound very busy.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah. Busy working. Mm-hmm. So with all these songs finished, is it just concentrating on this album, these tours, or are you constantly writing new material?
I'm like writing stuff, you know, to put like out another one, another album. But, you know, right now I'm just trying to, you know, make sure this one launches right. So just trying to tweet and Facebook and yeah. Vine and all sorts of
stuff. What do your parents think of the album?
They don't like it. I did a song about the Pope, and it was the only thing I had done when I went back for Christmas. So they were like, we want to hear something from it. And I showed it to them, and it ruined Christmas.
But they're evangelicals. They don't like the Pope.
I know, but they still, I don't know. I guess they have a soft spot for him, too. Like, you know, they just didn't like, they lump him in.
Who's the previous Pope? Pope Benedict?
Pope, yeah.
Pope B? Pope B the D?
Pope B.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because Pope
quit. Just quit.
He heard it. He heard your song.
He's like, you got me.
It worked, man.
I'm out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now we got Pope Frank.
Yeah. Who knows what this guy is, but, you know. He wasn't a Nazi at any point in his life.
No.
So that's an improvement.
That's a start. Yeah,
but he is from Argentina.
That's true.
So he harbored him.
Yeah. So throughout your career, has that been difficult with your parents? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's okay. It's like they don't like the stuff, but I think at this point they're pretty good at separating it. They're like, well, okay, we're not going to like what he does, so we'll just not talk about it. They used to be like, you know, I'd put, you know, when our sketches would go up online on YouTube, like my dad would call me and be like, so I flagged a whole bunch of your sketches on YouTube for being inappropriate like that. And then he'd go into being like, how are you doing? Like, you know, kind of like, so.
It's interesting. It's a weird thing because, you know, I come from, you know, a Southern Baptist mother and an NRA retired military father who might not like anything, but they like support you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're probably proud. They're probably proud.
Yeah.
Like,
you're successful like, happy doing that something. You're not coming to them for money.
Well, yeah. They're probably proud that you're so successful. They just, I mean, it's like a band. No, you're never going to have a band that your parents are going to like unless the songs.
The Beatles tribute band.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And that's hard to play.
And you're not a Satanist. So,
right.
That's good.
Or are you?
No.
No.
Nope. If I break something, I cop up to it. Like, I don't blame it on a demon.
growing up with that kind of like hardcore religious background, does that, you know, draw you towards any kind of faith-based thing or just kind of push your way?
You mean like material?
No, I just mean like, you know, as growing up with like such people who are just severe believers.
Right.
You know, you get to a point where you're like, I'm going to.
I don't know. You just kind of like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, and anybody who says they know what's going on, I'm like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like anyone who really thinks they know what happens when you die, I'm just like, that's insane.
Yeah, any kind of certainty about something you can't see, not really buying
that's
it.
Insanity.
What's the name of the record?
Drunk Text to Myself.
Just keeps getting better.
I do a song, you know Reggie Watts?
Yes. Not personally, but I've seen him a bunch.
Yeah, I do. He does the title track with me, the drunk text. I just took a whole bunch of text messages that I sent myself when I'm drunk. I took real ones, and I just took them from a 6-month period of time, and then Reggie like beatboxed under it.
Wait, so you really drunk texted yourself?
Oh yeah, I do it all the time. Like, because if I'm drinking, I'm like, oh, reminder. Here's a reminder of something to do.
Right.
It's like basically my refrigerator magnet kind of thing. And so, but then I wake up the next day and I look at it. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, so I was like, took a bunch of the weirder ones.
Fist beaver.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
Fist beaver.
Yeah.
Did you just come up with that?
I just came up with the band name.
That's awesome. Yeah. There's two ones on that on the song that are band names. Like one of them is like, I had a text. I woke up one morning and said, Dwarf Cooter would be a great band name. And then I had another one, which was Fat Girls Taking Dumps would be a great band name.
Maybe.
I would buy a t-shirt.
The mistake you made there is that's an album title.
Fat Girls Taking Dumps by Dwarf Cooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. See, there you go. That, right on. So what you need to do now is just go to Atlantic Records and say, hey, I think I can start a band. And they'd go, all right.
And then I just start humming the song. So someone goes like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Plop.
I have this great idea for a t-shirt that I think we can spin into a band.
So there's Mr. Moore, the aforementioned Trevor Moore. His album Drunk Text to Myself is in store right now, and in stores, not in store. But he might be doing an in-store. I have no idea. So he's on tour. tells us all kind of wonderful things. Very cool having him here and also having him tower over us. I always forget how tall Trevor is.
Yeah, he's tall. Tour, more, store.
What?
Like all these words were rhyming and I was trying to think of
it. Isn't
it
funny though how you, I was just thinking about this recently, how there's some people that when you think of them, you think like, oh yeah, that's a tall person. And other people, like, you don't think about it until they actually walk in the room and you're like, geez, I forgot how, and even people that I know really well, like I will not think about their height until they walk in and I'm like, geez, have you always been this much taller than me? But then there are people that you just think about as being big.
Like Tom Cruise and Sylvester Stallone?
No, I'm talking about people that you actually relate, that you actually physically come in contact with.
Maybe I do. You don't know me. You know what I'm all about. I could be on Scientology gun message boards constantly.
I think that you might be.
I might just be. I'm not. But if you want to get on a message board, we don't have one. We do have a Facebook
page. We will
page.
Never have a message board.
No, we won't. God. Internet comments. Facebook.com/goingofftrack. That's where you can email us or write a comment if you will, which would be great. Goingofftrack.com has all the episodes and a magical button that's not magic. It's run by digits and a mouse. You can hit it and you can donate money to our cause if you enjoy it or not. If you just dig listening to the stuff, that's cool too. No, it's not. Give us money. No, it's not. Do whatever. We just do this for fun. No, we like to support ourselves.
Money.
Yeah. We're also at Going Off Track on Twitter. Well, you know, we'll throw in some fun things every once in a while. And yeah, man, what else? Scalloped Frets.
Scalloped Frets. Paul Gilbert.
It's our new band, man.
To be with you.
Fade out to Mr. Big.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.